Religious conservatives openly want to overturn Roe v. Wade, the landmark Supreme Court decision legalizing most abortions. But in her new, exhaustively reported book, investigative journalist Catherine Stewart reminds us that opposition is relatively new. In the 1960s, Protestant leader Billy Graham said, "I believe in Planned Parenthood," disagreeing with Catholics who were against abortion. In 1971, the Southern Baptist Convention called for the legalization of abortion to preserve the emotional, mental, and physical health of the mother, and the Supreme Court obliged in 1973 with Roe v. Wade. It wasn't until 5 or 6 years later, Stewart writes, that the anti-abortion movement was created to unite Christians, but it was to fight to keep the tax-exempt status of Christian schools. And she quotes leaders saying the abortion fight was also part of a deeper goal to replace democracy with an autocratic theocracy, perhaps led by Donald Trump, based on the lie that a theocracy is what the founders wanted. There's a lot here. Catherine Stewart's book is The Power Worshippers: Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism. She's in our studio. Welcome.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
And we should say, you traveled to many of the conferences held by organizers of these movements. They spoke to you directly. You have quoted many of them directly. And still, what I just laid out, you know, people are going to say, that's crazy talk, you know, this kind of conspiracy thing. But then we hear quotes. Evangelical Lance Wallnau, who said, "With Trump in office, we'll have authority in the spirit to build the house of the Lord." Activist Paul Weyrich quoted saying, "Let us remember the religious right didn't come together in response to Roe. What got us going was the attempt on the part of the IRS to rescind the tax-exempt status of Bob Jones University because of its racially discriminatory practices." Briefly remind us about this. The real start of the anti-abortion movement was Bob Jones University?
As Weyrich knew, Jerry Falwell and many of his fellow Southern white conservative pastors were closely involved with segregated schools and universities, and they had come together as a political force out of the fear that their institutions would soon be deprived of their lucrative tax advantages. So remember, Bob Jones University was a segregated institution. In a radio address called "Is Segregation Scriptural?" he declared, "God is the author of segregation."
Well, but then in this move to organize Christians, you and others have said that it was necessary for Protestants and Catholics to join forces. Previously, you know, Protestants had been, they were for the health of the mother, as we just heard.
Indeed, when Roe v. Wade was passed, Betty Ford called it a great, great decision. Barry Goldwater, that great conservative hero, applauded, and his wife, Peggy, co-founded Planned Parenthood in Arizona. But over time, leaders of the movement knew that they needed an issue that was going to unite conservative Catholics and conservative evangelicals. And over time, they settled on abortion because defending the tax advantages of segregated academies really wasn't an issue that was going to seem attractive to the movement.
Well, and you say none of this would have been possible without a well-laid-out revisionist history laid out by Christian nationalist historians like David Barton and Russus John Rushdoony, R.J. Rushdoony. Let's just get a little context here. In 1980, the religious right movement was now snowballing, the one you just described. Ronald Reagan, who, by the way, is governor of California, passed the most liberal abortion rights law previous to Roe v. Wade, is now running for president. He's speaking at a conservative convention, expressing doubts about, you know, evolution, for instance. You quote an activist, Gary North, saying at that convention, "None of us would be here without R.J. Rushdoony." Talk about these strands that you draw a line from to today.
Well, Rushdoony advocated a return to biblical law in America. He said the Bible commands Christians to exercise absolute dominion over the earth and all of its inhabitants. Women are destined to be subordinate to men. Men are destined to be ruled by a spiritual aristocracy of right-thinking Christians. And the federal government is an agent of evil. Public education, in his mind, was a threat to civilization. He laid it all out in a program that he calls Christian Reconstruction. Rushdoony drew his own inspiration from a number of sources. One is the work of America's band of pro-slavery theologians. Another comes from the theologians who labored on pro-capitalist libertarian responses to the New Deal.
So hold up there. You've got pro-slavery Christian theologians who felt that slavery was a direct command from God?
Indeed. The widely influential Presbyterian theologian Robert Louis Dabney cast abolitionism as a hurricane of anti-Christian attack. That's a quote.
Well, and so these are the words that are passed on by R.J. Rushdoony, who has died, but as you know, many told you, and you quote them liberally, inspired the religious right movement that grew in the 1980s. But at this time also, there was a revisionist history about what the Founding Fathers said. Now, we know the country was founded on a separation of church and state, but those words were twisted.
Yes, in Rushdoony's telling, it was not the intention of America's founders to establish a non-sectarian representative democracy. He characterized the American political system as a, quote, development of Christian feudalism. That's what he said. And he said that the First Amendment aimed to establish freedom, quote, not from religion, but for religion. This is a phrase widely parroted by Christian nationalists today.
You met people. You went to the Museum of the Bible, a private museum in Washington, D.C., where you met people, tourists, who expressed to you, wow, I always thought we had separation of church and state, but we don't.
I went to strategy meetings, pastor gatherings, and I heard many activists say, I was always taught a lie that church and state should be separate. But now, after hearing this presentation, I realize that that's not true and that's not what America's founders intended.
You write that you're also hearing leaders of this movement say outright that the Bible is commanding parts of their movement.
You know, Ralph Drollinger, Capital Ministry, he's held Bible study sessions with members of the United States Congress. At least 11 out of 15 members of Trump's cabinet asserts the Bible is in favor of deregulation. Progressive taxes are unbiblical. And he insists that nowhere does God command the institutions of government or commerce to fully support those with genuine needs. When we think of the religious right, we often imagine it as preoccupied with cultural issues such as abortion or same-sex marriage, but its aim is to create a new type of order, one in which Christian nationalist leaders will enjoy positions of exceptional privilege in politics, law, and society. So this movement is a political movement. Its goal is power. When the leaders are speaking to the rank and file, it's all abortion all the time. But when you listen to what they say, when they're in the forums that they share, when they talk to one another, they're advocating for a very wide range of policy positions, economic policy, foreign policy, and domestic policy.
The left has had movements as well, civil rights, women's rights, gay rights. Why is this different?
These movements that you're mentioning respect the Constitution. They respect pluralism. I think most Americans reject the politics of conquest and division that the Christian nationalist movement represents.
This deep dive for you, including your previous book, The Good News Club, started in a personal place. You were in Southern California, 2009, and an older couple from another town wanted to start a Bible club at your children's public school?
That's right. It was really surprising to me that a group that intended to convert very little children to fundamentalist Christianity could even operate in a public school, which is supposed to serve a diverse community. Good news clubs confuse little children into thinking that the religion of the club is endorsed by their school. And I saw how leaders of the club were exploiting their position in the public school to try to persuade kids to recruit their peers to the club and sometimes even target them with faith-based bullying and bigotry. Good news clubs were part of a much larger attack on public education, and the attack on public ed was really just one part of a wide-ranging attack on America as a modern constitutional democracy.
Has anyone come forward since the publication of this book and said that's not true?
No one has said that's not true. A couple nights ago, I had a half-hour conversation with Jim Doman, the head of Church United. He knew I was an opposition journalist. He still invited me to one of his events. He said, terrific piece. I thought that was interesting.
Catherine Stewart, her book is The Power Worshippers, Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism. Catherine, thank you so much for speaking to us about it.
Thanks so much for having me.